talking a little bit about one of the other players that I'm familiar with in the space, which is Aweber. Could Aweber be going public by content contact has?
Not sure about that. I'm not sure what their goals are. I don't know if they're raising investment capital or if they're trying to sell a company or have a liquidity event. If they could get a revenue system for 30 or 40 million, that certainly might be a possibility for them.
Do you think
Aweber... ...compared to us, in terms of number of employees, and I'm not sure if they don't publish what their revenues are, so I'm not sure how big they are currently.
You don't think they're in the $20 million to $50
million range? Oh, I'm pretty sure they're not.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah, as far as I know, we're driven on by factors, too.
Right, okay. What about compared to the big players, like, say, Exact Target?
Sure. Exact Target is actually probably about $30-35 million annual revenue, and they are looking to go public in the next few agreements, actually. They don't compete against us or constant contact them more in the sort of interior enterprise markets. If you want to go out and pay $5,000-$10,000 sort of minimum at an entry level, network, much higher CPM for higher dynamic content generation, more advanced features like that, you would use Exact Target.
So, in your case, you're both doing email, you're getting email through for customers, but a company like Exact Target is almost basically irrelevant.
In terms of the small business market, our prices start at $10 a month. I don't know exact target, but it's probably more like $1,500 minimum, maybe around $2,000 to $3,000 minimum. But in terms of, being a deliverability engine and getting messages through the inbox of the recipient, that's something we're very, very good at as well, providing the autoresponder functionality and the ease of use and the survey.
Right, okay. Would you suggest then that, let me make sure I understand this. I'm stunned by this, the size of Constant Contact, because I assumed that they were just another little small company, and you're showing me that they're not huge, but they're starting to become a decent size, and that's real. Yeah. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, they've raised $38 million over the past 10 years, so they've been around quite a while.
And, so where did all the customers come from?
Well, the 24 million small businesses in the United States, and they've got 145,000 of them, so they have a pretty good customer acquisition model through advertising, and as well as on advertising.
And so they've just been advertising all over the place, acquiring customers and getting sign-ups and, the usual stuff. I just haven't seen their presence around that strongly. I didn't know that size. I guess I'm both just reading the market.
Yeah, they're not really too big of a player in the internet marketing industry. That may be one reason why you might not have heard them too much. And, a lot of people that will want to do a lot of emails, say more than 25,000 emails, would probably not use Constant Contact because they're very focused on the low end of the market.
All right. And so what would you say to differentiate? How are you different to those guys?
Sure. Number of ways. Number one, we have much better deliverability as far as as far as the statistics they publish, 97% inbox delivery. We have third-party audited deliverability by Total Veracity that 2 months ago had some 100.0% inbox deliverability, and it's not test last week at 99.9% inbox delivery. So we focus a lot on deliverability. Our prices at the entry level start at $10 a month, whereas their product, if you include surveying and you include their archive feature, which we include for free as a part of our product, start at $27 a month, so we're considerably cheaper at the low end, as well as every level that they have. We offer an autoresponder service, which they do not. We offer less segmentation. We have more tablets, and we feel that our software is easier to use, has a better user interface. So those are just some of the differentiating factors between us.
Well, I can tell you when I was evaluating just for what to use for my stuff, one of my key things was being able to import lists. And then there was a couple of other features as well. I had one of my developers look into it, and we evaluated Constant Contact, and we stayed with iContact. We moved to iContact.
Yep. So, I think for anyone that, sending a high volume of email, you could probably find their service a little bit there.
For high volume, you mean for Constant Contact?
Yeah, they very much focus on someone that might be sending out 500 emails, 1,000 emails, 2,000 emails a month, that type of thing.
Right. That's the best of the volume. My list is fairly small for the sort of stuff I'm doing. Yeah. I'm not trying to get into lists. I have others in other markets, but not for this list that I'm managing here. Okay, it's a small list, but it's a very targeted list, and so I want to make sure that I'm getting every single email through and there's no problems and, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so in terms of importing, you look at another one of our competitors, Aweber, as you mentioned, and one of the things they require is that you have to redouble opt in your list every time you upload it. And that's not a requirement at all, so that's something that's benefited us in terms of paying customers over from a stormy weather.
Yeah, and that's like I don't understand how they're still able to do that. We talked a little bit offline about that. You want to talk about a little bit about how that works and why you're actually able to do that and still get your master?
Sure. We just started 5 years ago and we had a tremendous focus on deliverability. And what we created was something called the Preemptive Spam Protection Program, which is a number of algorithms and technical programs, but at its core, what we're able to do is when you upload a list, we're able to check it against commonly harvested content that's on the harvested list, and then when you send it to the content against so that he can likely to have a high chance score and get through the recipient. And then when it's sent, every message that's sent to more than 1,000 recipients, we have a human manual review within 5 minutes. So if your message is being sent out and it's by amplified promotion, we will stop that and it will never go out. So we're able to stop the very large majority of anything that even seems to be potentially influenced through the email before it goes out, which has allowed us to maintain very good relationships with the ISPs and have complete full inbox delivery.
I remember seeing this and not understanding, like, why I'd send an email and it would take a while to go out. In other services I've used it and it might take a little while, and I understood that it was just because I was being queued by a mail server and was like, that was okay. But, you know, you kind of do want the mail to go out fairly soon. And I found that confusing. Like, it's been queued. I remember seeing something like it's been queued to be reviewed, or someone's support told me that, and I didn't understand it. I was like, man, what is this? Like, you have to review my email before it goes out. So, like, it's almost insulting. But now when you explain it this way, it makes a whole lot of sense. And, yeah. I mean, you built your business model around it in large part, I would suggest. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, we've set up a process and we've sort of outsourced it so that we can do the reviews, I think, something like 99% of the time in under 5 minutes. So it's something that won't affect your speed, but will allow you to get very good affordability.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, and that's what I'm noticing now, is that the reviews are quick. And so even though, do you build reputation up for customers? Like, in the case like mine, where I've been sending them my list fairly reliably over a period of time, do you remove that review, or do you still keep it in place?
Absolutely. So we have higher threshold where you've been here, so if you've been here less than 2 months, we'll review that. Well, if you're sending to this number of people, or more, if you've been here more than 2 months, that number goes higher. At any point in time, if you request not be reviewed, we'll take over your recent sending history and your complaint volume. We can add usual white list that you don't have to be reviewed.
So you obviously spend a lot of time in deliverability. I'm interested in your opinion of reputation management. I'm talking about guys like Hadius, Syndical Certified, and forget the name of the other one. There's one that cheated in the other two. Maybe you want to just start, and I'll look for that. Will you tell him? Will you give me your response?
Yeah, I mean, for the most part...
Oh, ISIPP is the name.
Oh, okay. I mean, for the most part, sender certification, that you must be calling other different things, is generally what you need to do if you aren't using a third-party ESP that has good availability. And, you know, if you are a financial institution, and your bank, you want to certify your email, you can pay a special sort of extra cost per email to have your email certified so that the image show up and you have a special certification when the message gets in the inbox. But for the large majority of senders, it's just something that's not required. If you're trying to build the infrastructure yourself, which will take money and time to and lots of energy to build up those relationships with the ISPs, sender certification is sort of a way to help with that. But you really don't need it.
So it does have value there in those instances. Let's say that you're not someone where your main focus is email, but it is important to what you do. Right. In the reputation management, that they go in and basically help facilitate those relationships. They go along and say to Hotmail and to AOL everyone that, yes, this guy is a good guy and you should listen to him. That's basically what you're saying.
As far as I'm aware, it's more an automated service. It's sort of something that's appended to the header of the email, so that it can authenticate that it is from a certified sender that's posted bond. There are services like ReturnPath and Fiddle Veracity, however, that will do what you said, which is help you as someone trying to build your own sending infrastructure and your own IPs, build up relationships, whitelist agreements, feedback loops with the ISP. The problem that one runs into is unless you're sending a noticeable volume, which is, you know, 50 million emails per month or higher, probably more than 100 million per month, people at the ISPs aren't going to take you seriously. It's almost easier if you just pay an ESP, you know, service provider who already has spent time in the investment to get those ISP and IT relationships set up. The feedback loop really take a long time to set up, and they're extremely valuable with the major ISPs.
Well, I'll give you an example. Let's say tags.com, social networking website, they through their viral index process, sorry, they bring in 300,000 new users a day, and that's all. They're all through email invites. They use services like, I think they use both Hadius and Syndical Certified to manage their reputation management. So it's a good fit for a company like that, instead of going out and working directly with all of them, Hotmail and AOL and everyone directly.
Sure.
Or are you suggesting, even in a case like that, that they don't really need to do that, it makes more sense than just to go and work directly?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like what they've done is they've created their own transactional email sending engine that sounds like sends out 10 million emails a month. So if you're trying to manage your own email sending application in your own backend, then sender certification authentication can be valuable, in my opinion. If you're trying to send out marketing messages to recipients, it generally is just a lot easier to use an email sending provider that already has this relationship rather than try and set it up yourself.
No, sure, I understand that. I mean, because we have people with all sorts of different backgrounds listening, so it's useful to understand this for different cases. And what I'm really trying to understand here is your thoughts on the reputation management itself. Because I talked quite a bit with Anne Mitchell from ISIPP, and she's explained how they will go over every IP address that you're going to be sending mail from, and they'll have a review of exactly what the IP address has been used for. You know, this is this kind of email, and this is where the source came from, and this is it's single opt-in, and you know, this has happened to it, and so on. And so, obviously, hopefully, a lot of it's confirmed opt-in, but at least then it's clear where it's being used, and so when then questions come back, let's say Hotmail has questions about it, they can it's referred to ISIPP, who already has a kind of review already done, and therefore things move smoothly. That's the process. I'm interested in understanding your thoughts on whether there's value there, or do you think it's just better going to do that direct?
And I think if you're sending out, if sending out transactional emails, in other words, you know, thanks for signing up for our software program, or a, you know, something that kind of like you to welcome the new member to the network, that in that case, I think it can be valuable. If you're trying to send out marketing emails, the cost of using an authentication service and having to set up the ID relationship yourself anyway, for the most part, I think it just makes sense to stick with an ESP. We've never used, sender authentication services because we don't have to, because we already have all relationships set up and automated. Those sort of would be, it's something you'd need to pay for if you don't have those relationships set up, if you want to do the email yourself.
If you're doing some kind of an application which is something that doesn't fit into eye contact, that's kind of what I'm referring to in this instance.
Right, if you're doing sort of non-marketing emails at a very high volume of, you know, more than 50 million a month, then that would probably make sense.
Right. There's no kind of engine out there to handle all that stuff for you, is there? You have to do all that stuff yourself and then just use reputation management to help get it through, is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, you can use, there's sort of the back of open source tools like Postfix and Sendmail that can do some of that. There are application boxes like Strongmail and message systems that can allow you to set some of that. But you still would need to set up the relationships with the ideas and then the return path and sender score and those types of in order to be able to do that.
Hmm. Actually, Sendmail and Strongmail was a cocktail the other night, so no.
Oh, good.
All right. So, in your case, did you start off? How did you start making sure your mail was getting delivered? I mean, your eye contact, like right now, you're a decent size. Back then, you weren't. How did you get your mail in?
Sure. It's interesting because it wasn't as when we normally send a small amount of email, you're not really on the radar screen. And once you sort of get to that 2, 3 million, 4 million a month, which you actually get to pretty quickly, then you start to have to set up the feedback loops and the relationships. We certainly didn't always have as sophisticated systems as we have now. I think in some cases our delivery wasn't as good in the past as it is now. That's certainly the case. But we've evolved and we've learned, and fortunately we have 5 years of experience now in getting 500 million emails a month through the inbox of the recipients. And we're able to, you know, provide that at a, you know, service on cost. So it's very easily and cheaply distributed to 16,000 customers that we have.
So do you have like a stat, like you watch in the morning or during the day, like what your deliverability is?
We check our deliverability once a month for a third-party testing firm, and we have a full-time sort of deliverability vice president of IP relation person that monitors that constantly for our network information center.
Hmm. And that's in the nut. So you get a report back once a month, and you said you're in the 99th percentage. You're 99th percentage of getting through.
That's right, yes.
And then you would attribute that mainly to your review, obviously keeping your IP clean and maintaining those relationships, but in that the review process you have and getting the mail checked for it, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ability to detect anyone that's importing harvested list, the ability to see content before it comes out, it's stuff that it looks like spam, and the feedback loop. So if anyone does get complaints, which does happen, of course, you're able, instead of them blocking our IPs, they report those complaints back to us so we aggregate them. And they were able to say, well, this person got this percentage of complaints, this percentage of complaints. And if it goes over our acceptable ratio that we've internally established, then we can ask them to do things like double opt in their list and even best practices to improve their sign up for those types of things.
Have you patented this process of having your mails reviewed before they go up?
No, we did not. It's sort of in the fast moving world of web-based software, but if I need a patent 3 years from now, it's sort of might be irrelevant. So it's something we might look at in the future. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like one of the more important things on your service, having the mail checked before it goes out.
I would agree that that's very beneficial for our customers.
Yeah. Alright. How have you been working with Digital Veracity? Just back onto the getting the mail delivered, and I mean, so they're a consulting firm to help you get your email delivered, right?
Right. They've got an automated testing service, but that's 129. That's what we do on a monthly basis, so that's it. But whenever you and my ISP representative wants to build up trust with you and they know your volume is sufficient enough, they'll open the door for you. It's almost sort of like a secret network. You sort of have to join the message and I have used Working Group and the ESPC and the EEC. Eventually you get in with the right people, and you see enough people time and time again that they didn't trust you, and if you're volunteering enough, they'll let you in to set the feedback loops so that you can manage the complaints yourself instead of them shutting you down.
So it's like the secret decoder ring. There's a secret circle of email people, and you've been allowed into that secret circle, and now you can get all your mail through.
That's absolutely the case, and you know, pretty much anyone that has a good reputation that is not getting high levels of complaints that is sending more than 100 million emails a month can get in there as well if they join the right organizations. And I mentioned if you're sending less than 100 million emails a month, per month, it makes sense to just join an ESP that already has those relationships set up.
And so it is very much reputation driven. You've got to know the right people and kind of prove your way, and then they kind of allow you in, and then they'll work with you. Is that right?
That's absolutely the case. Yes.
Hmm. And do you know these people personally, or things, relationships sort of evolved over time electronically?
Some of the people I know personally are these guys, their relations, their wives, and their husbands, and their kids, and one of them gets back to us, and sees my conferences 3 times a year, and all that stuff.
Okay, so you do know them quite well personally?
You trust them, because they're very helpful people.
I guess they have a lot of other people want their time as well.
That's very, very true.
And so, I mean, maybe you can talk about one of those people. Let's say, you know, I don't have to name a company, but, you know, one of these guys at one of these major companies, what are they typically doing all day? They're just you know, let's say Hotmail, they're deciding who gets into Hotmail or who doesn't.
Right, I mean, if you sort of obviously spend the huge issue, right, and the big ISPs, AOL, are playing Hotmail, Gmail, the email service providers and all the ISPs, they went on this sort of big, ambitious mission maybe 5 or 6 years ago to solve all spam, and from that, you started to get a lot of positives where they were solving a lot of mail that was supposed to get through. And that created just as much discontent among their customers as the spam. So what they tried to start doing 3 or 4 years ago was establishing relationships with the high-volume, legitimate senders of email so that they could make sure the legitimate senders of email got through while they were still blocking the spammers. They didn't have those relationships that were sending high-volume, legitimate email. So, you know, there are special people that are hired to build relationships and to determine who is a legitimate sender, who's not a legitimate sender, based on average percentages as well as complaint ratios. And whether or not you come from a company that has email information based, of course. So eventually you get into a club once they get to know you, and the first call, say, well, you know, technical support 4.5 years ago, they first got a first message block, you don't get anywhere at all, and eventually you get through the right person by getting introduced to that person, but there's no way you can get acclimated to them, you have to get introduced to them. So eventually you get introduced to the right people, and you can get the relationship set to make sure you deliver all you do.
And so at this point now, is your mail delivered by default to AOL?
Yeah, I mean, our mail is delivered into the inbox at AOL, and we have a daily metric called a complaint ratio, and as long as that complaint ratio remains below their acceptable limit, we'll continue to be on an enhanced whitelist senders.
So you're an enhanced sender always into AOL?
That's correct.
Hmm. And because at the other end, AOL basically wants your mail, don't they?
Yes, exactly. If there are customers that want to receive our mail, as long as that remains the case, we'll continue to get mail through.
And as long as you guys are checking the mail that before it's being sent out all the time, then that's going to maintain that balance and it's going to work.
That's right. Yeah.
That is really interesting. And so let's say a problem starts to escalate there. Well, like how does that happen very often, and how are you able to resolve that sort of thing?
Sure. You know, probably 2 or 3 years ago, we ran into trouble where we couldn't get messages through AOL at all. We were going to get to the check mailbox for about a week and a half period. Obviously, that made a major issue for our customers. So we sat on the phone and tried to get to the right people. Eventually, we realized we just had to get introduced by paying the little brassy or return back the money to consult with us so that we could get respect and reputation, get introduced to the right people. That's what we ended up doing. Now, we don't really have any. Now, our volume is at such high level that it's very unlikely that one customer could slip through our protective measures and cause a lift from time to time in a good day, which would go over our acceptable ratio, but as long as we're trailing. 90-day average is low, but the ratio they give us is tend to be okay.
Is it hard for you to stay under these ratios?
It's hard to get under the ratios. You have to have the right systems of stopping people who send out messages that are going to get complaints. And we've been able to develop automated systems that stop people from sending if they are over their complaint ratio. And notify why and asking them to lock in their list, et cetera. But it is an aggressive ratio. I actually cannot tell anyone the number it is, but it's a certain number of emails per thousand. That you can get a complaint on, and if it's all that for any extended period of time, your messages just will not get through to the ESP.
Hmm. What about, is that the same with Hotmail and Yahoo and Gmail as well?
Yeah, I mean, everyone has their own ratio, and the ratios are sometimes algorithms based on spam complaints as well as bounce percentages, as well as the number of bad emails you send, which are emailed to addresses that are no longer exist. And, as long as you have the right systems, the ratio of complaints is low, you're managing, automatically managing your buses, which is why it's really important to have a system that automatically manages your content, and automatically when you unsubscribe, you'll try to get through.
Right, okay. Well, I noticed, well, actually, let me ask you this question, and I want to tell you my ignorance about you on spam filtering, how to reduce false positives. Tell me if you think I'm crazy or not.
Sure.
So I use Google applications, and so effectively Gmail, and I get a fair amount of spam. I've always gotten maybe 70 to 80 messages a day, and suddenly in the last 2 weeks, I'm now getting 500 to 1,000 spams a day, which is kind of annoying, but you know, Google does a really good job in putting them into the spam folder. But what I've suddenly found is that I can't filter them all. I used to go through and just check it every day or so to make sure that I could was not bleeding any real mail. It's got the volume load, but I can't. And so I'm now using Google's, it's not properly built in there. You can set tags. You can basically they're tagged as spam, and I'm now searching those with certain keywords such as my name, names of business things that I'm working on, to search the spam so that to see if there's any mail that's relevant to me that's in there. If there is, then I pull it out and put it into the inbox. But I'm surprised that Gmail doesn't do that automatically, and I'm wondering what your thoughts would be as if that's something that would be valuable to end users, where they could set keywords on things that are important so that it automatically gets pulled out of the spam folder.
No, I like that idea. I think it's very good. And would certainly encourage Gmail to listen to you and do that. You know, you can set up Outlook to automatically do things like that through the filter system. And maybe what Google Mail or Gmail needs is a filter system so you can set some business rules to rearrange where it must just go in based on what the topics and the keywords are found in.
Well, actually, they do have the ability to create filters, I guess. I guess maybe I can already do that with Gmail. When I just create a filter, that it just searches for a keyword somewhere in the word and make sure it doesn't go into spam. Maybe that'll help eliminate false positives, and then I don't even need to check. Maybe it'll solve me a little productivity issue for me. Thank you.
Good.
But they should make that a little more obvious. That's very cool. Okay, do you want to just tell us more about your services and what you're looking for and how people can help you? Because you've obviously got, you've proven knowledge of deliverability in this call. There's a lot of people from different perspectives that are going to be reading this and listening to this. How are you able to help people? I mean, are you only able to help people who have a little tiny list, or are you able to help people who have, like, big gigantic lists? Who are you looking to talk to?
Sure. Our specialty is being able to send out lots and lots of emails very quickly and get inbox delivery. So while the large majority of our customers are small businesses, less than sort of a 10,000 person list, we've got people that are up there sending 5 million emails a day and everything in between. So we want to work with everybody that's sending out permission-based emails. Now everything has to be opt-in, so people have to request to receive it. Do not do third-party offers. Do not do purchase lists. But if you have a list of people who have requested to receive your content, regardless of the number of people on it, iCardax is a really efficient way of managing that list.
Let me just ask a question then. How does cover registration fit into that? I'm talking not pre-checked. I'm talking with how you use it to check the box to opt in. Can you handle it like that?
As long as it is unchecked and the user is taking the physical action of checking the box to opt in to that message, then that is okay.
Okay. And so as long as they're doing that kind of stuff, basically any list size is okay with you?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep, and you know, our published pricing goes up to 100,000 subscribers, so if you have 100,000 subscribers, it would cost you $689 a month. Above that, we go on a CPM basis, so you know, somewhere ranging between $2.50 and $3.50 per 1,000 emails is our standard pricing, depending on the volume that you're sending.
And are those pricing, I mean, that's, for someone that, say, they're sending offers to a list or something like that, are they going to be able to make money?
Well, if you're not, your offers aren't very good, right? So what we... You know, if you're spending $2.50 per 1,000 emails, hopefully your offer's good enough that you're making that back. You know, emails tend to be probably the most effective way of getting return on investment from marketing message online. If you compare it to cost per click, or you know, obtain search costs, or any other way of marketing online, banner ads, etc. So, in terms, if you're communicating with an existing customer list or someone that's expressed interest in what you're sending, we generally, you know, our average customer receives a tremendous amount of return, and you know, they might spend, you know, $300-$400 to send out a list to, you know, the 50,000 people and making easily, you know, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 in revenue for that $300-$400 spend.
So if, I mean, let's say if I've got I've been selling a product in the past, a weight loss product, I've got a list of, I don't know, 1 or 2 million buyers, it hasn't been active for 2 or 3 years, and I want to do something with the list, can I take that list and upload that into my contact and start mailing to it?
We would highly recommend that you double opt it in before you do. If you have not been in touch with people on your list in the last 6 months, it's sort of considered a dead list, and it's no longer an opt-in list for our definition. So we would request that you double opt in any list that you haven't sent to in 6 months before you send it out. Now, if you don't, that's fine, and that's up to you. But if that ends up generating complaints that are over a lot of the threshold, what you can be certain will be in touch very quickly.
Okay, so then if I were to clean off the complaints and that kind of stuff, like mail it somewhere else first, and then find where the issues are, and then bring the rest of the list into your system, then that would be fine.
Yes, you could mail it somewhere else first to bring the rest into our system, or you could send that double opt-in request using our system to both of those people. The people that still want it, obviously, would confirm their subscription click through.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we both know that doing that kind of thing is not the most desirable approach.
Oh, sure. Well, I'll have to challenge you there. You will end up with probably a list maybe 20 to 25% the size of the original list, but the quality of that list will be much higher and the response will be much higher. And often, if you get people that are more qualified, you can send offers that are much more targeted, sometimes make more than what on the list four times it does. But I do agree with you that when you double opt-in your list, you often do lose a number of people on it, so don't recommend doing that unless you have not been in touch for quite some time.
So you say that it's five, when you do a double opt-in, you see between 5 and 25% are the numbers that stay?
Oh, no, usually about 25%.
25% opt-in?
20 to 25%, yeah.
20 to 25%, right.
Yeah, if the relationship is recent, you know, it could be 5, 50, 60%.
Right.
But if it's been a while, you know, you're going to get more than 20, 25%.
Cool. Anything else you want to add in closing?
No, I very much enjoyed the call. And, you know, I very much am focused on building my contact into a big public company and creating lots of jobs here in North Carolina over the next couple years. So if anyone on the call is interested in talking about venture capital or building a public company or advertising online or even marketing, please feel free to contact me, and I look forward to continue working with you, Adrian, and everyone else.
Very good. Thank you very much.